today we're going to be talking about and hearing presentations from the 2011 HIMSS Public Health Davies Award winners. So they've just been minted Public Health Davies Award winners quasi today, so let's give them a round of applause. Later today, they'll actually get the award at the closing plenary, so you'll get to do that again in about 2 hours. All right, so let's get started. Just as background, the Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society established the Public Health Davies about 7 years ago, and it's to recognize the implementation of any health IT solution that improves the quality of life for the general population, whether it's in a community, city, county, or in a state. So what we're going to hear from today is how these two wonderful organizations have taken, whether it's an electronic health record or other health IT solution, used it to improve the lives of the citizens that they represent and provide care for. So our first panelist is Mr. Aaron Kite Powell. He's a surveillance epidemiologist for the Essence Systems Manager for the state of Florida. And how about if we just, Aaron, if you'd like to just come up and sure. we'll get started on the presentation. Thank you, sir.
Page down.
There's one right up there.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for having us here to present our systems and our work. My name is Aaron Keitel, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the Florida Essence implementation and describe how it's evolved and changed over the years. So let's start off with implementation goals. We really wanted to do a number of things throughout the implementation. Some of the overarching goals were to improve access to multiple public health data sources, access that is hopefully intuitive and reaches out to a broad array of skill levels rather than only to the epidemiologists who are trained in data management and various software systems. We wanted to be able to get data out to those who manage the programs and put it in an environment where they can make the best use of it. And so thereby reducing the need for other specialized training via other software, whatever it may be, for data management analysis, mapping, et cetera. And if we can succeed in creating that environment, then we can also improve communications and community awareness by closing what's typically called closing the public health surveillance loop, which is to say that report generation, et cetera, is more easily accessible to a broad range of people, and therefore they can give this information back to their community partners as feedback. And as a result of that, we hope that improved decision-making as related to disease control can happen through this greater access and sharing of information. We also wanted to reduce the need for spending in other existing systems. So there are a number of systems that the Florida Department of Health, Bureau of Epidemiology work on that have their own goals. And by bringing this the Essence system in, we could prioritize development a bit more and not duplicate. So in this system, we can provide a common environment where epidemiologists can go to access multiple data sources and conduct outbreak detection to minimize impact on population health, to do routine, good descriptive epidemiologic analysis in one place across data sources, and generally to monitor morbidity and mortality over time, over person, place, time, et cetera. The system is also flexible in terms of the emergency department data for conducting ad hoc queries and also for bringing in new data sources. So there's really been an evolving context. We started implementation in 2007, and originally this was to build our syndromic surveillance capacity as the sort of the bread and butter of Essence early on. But we really wanted to change this into more of an information system, if you will, or a disease information system. system where we can do good descriptive epidemiologic analysis across data sources, sort of creating a data mark for, in terms of certain data sources, flattening out the data of transactional systems that are complex relational databases, and putting it into an environment where we can easily get the information in a place that's queryable by a broad range of individuals. Typically, people think of systems like Essence or syndromic surveillance as heavy on statistical alerts, and everything's around alert tables. That hasn't changed for some data sources, but we really work to also build out the AVR, analysis, visualization, and reporting schemes that are balanced of how we can present the data and get the data out of the system. So there are a couple examples of user customizable interfaces, both dashboards of data and then also alerts that are user customizable. So a little bit of background on Florida, just briefly. Florida, the state as a whole, has a population of about 19 million, with 80 million tourists annually. The Bureau of Epidemiology, where I work, it works in a sort of support and guidance role to the 67 county health departments. We do a lot of surveillance system management, analysis, and some development. So the 67 health department offices that have their own communicable disease staff. And they're the group that completes the case investigations in terms of the reportable disease data, data entry into Merlin, which is our reportable disease registry, and then the monitoring process in response to whatever it is they may see in the data that requires a response, regardless of the data source, really. But I mean, the terms here, it's mostly syndromic data and reportable disease data. It's important to recognize the group that you're developing for, that you're working with. You have a very broad range of technical expertise, and that has to go into your thinking when you're working with enhancing systems. So an average, in terms of use of the Essence system in Florida, on average about 57 unique logins per week. Of the folks that have access to the system, of roughly 220 are hospital level users, not part of Department of Health. In terms of public health users, we have multiple different program areas. So the Bureau of Epidemiology, where I'm located, and also some of our other bureaus that deal with other diseases that are reportable or have particular interest in syndromic data, whether it's the ED data or the poison control data. So the Bureau of Environmental Public Health Medicine, Bureau of Innovations are just a few examples. At the county level, we have approximately 40 counties that I would say are regular users of the system. 37 counties have reporting emergency departments that can range from one hospital to 17 hospitals. The other three data sources, which I'll go into a little more detail in a moment, the Merlin reportable disease, all virus fast mortality data, and the poison center and poison control call data are all statewide and are representative of the state as a whole. This is the graphic of the statistic that I just mentioned, showing in the last year roughly 57 users, but it varies considerably and continues to grow. So it's used quite broadly across the state for any number of purposes. A little bit of the technical details. Essence is a multi-tier web-based application. Has composed of web apps, the presentation side, the business logic side, the databases. That can be further broken down into data ingestion databases, detection databases, the web database, the algorithms, and then the web application itself. It's based upon SQL database. The developers of Essence have recently experimented and implemented data cubes that improve performance of the querying capability on the user side. It's a secure browser access, internet accessible, and development's primarily in Java, handles a variety of different data feeds, both real-time and pseudo-real-time. Talk a little bit about the data sources that we're collecting in Florida, and start with the emergency department data. We typically, at this point, we're moving away and developing better capability to receive data in more real-time, but with meaningful use. But currently, roughly one file to two files per day we get. Actually, 176 facilities, so hospitals and urgent care centers send files every day. So far, a total of over 25 million records at this point. We get the raw files from the hospital that includes patient chief complaints, demographic variables, discharge diagnoses in some instances, discharge disposition, etc. cetera. And then the primary units of analysis of the system then parses that information into categories and syndromes, sub-syndromes, et cetera, and allows for free text, the ad hoc free text query of the either the discharge diagnosis or the chief complaint field. The Merlin reportable disease data, we get a file once per hour from our reportable disease data system. And these are separate modules. Don't envision this as combining these fields, these data sources into one place. They're separate modules. However, the presentation can be on one graphic, for instance, if there was a purpose for looking at, you know, X syndrome and X reportable diseases, we can combine these and look at them in the same place. The actual reportable disease case, the disease itself, along with stratifications by various other demographic variables or other variables like whether it was outbreak associated, follow-up status, et cetera, that are standard variables within Merlin. The Florida Poison Center data, we get a file once every 10 to 20 minutes, total of over 1.5 million calls at this point, going back to 1999, I believe. Within this, there are a large number of fields, but we could summarize by saying that based upon the way the Poison Centers categorize their data, it's based on major substance, minor substance, the substance itself, major health effects, clinical effects, and then a broad range of different demographic type variables where we're able to stratify and look at the data in different ways. And lastly, the most recent addition so far are the mortality data from our statewide Office of Vital Statistics. So we get one file per day. It's important to note here, though, while we get a file per day, a record that we receive, for instance, today could be of a death that occurred 2 months ago. So the Office of Vital Statistics is moving toward an electronic death record, which we expect will be fairly close to full implementation, perhaps later this year, but in 2012. Within this data source, there are a large number of variables. Again, we get the National Center for Health Statistics cause of death groups. So these are annual groups, monthly groups, infant groups, flexible, the ICD, ACME codes, ICD-10 codes. We're also able to query the free text. I don't know those of you who are familiar with death records, but on a death record, you have the actual literal statement of why the person died and the physician writing in the different causes. They're available much more quickly than the ICD-10 coded aspect of the death record, and so we're able to query, do free text querying, make use of that functionality in essence on these, what we call the literals, if you will. And these are essentially free text cause of death statements. I'm going to focus talk a little bit here and there about these different data sources. I can't go into each of them, but this is just to give you a representation of where we have hospitals that are reporting. And you can see that we have very good representation within the metro areas. So if you look at the bottom right, where you have the Miami-Dade, Fort Lauderdale area, and then just another pointer here. Yeah, and then so Tampa Bay, Hillsborough, Tampa Bay, Orlando, Orange County, Jacksonville, et cetera. And then there's some smaller hospitals scattered in between. We're always working to expand this, and with meaningful use, we hope that eventually that will become easier to do. Speaking of meaningful use, I just wanted to give a little, you know, one slide update on where we are with that in Florida. So the system as a whole was implemented pre-standard. So we were part of the group that worked with the ISDS and CDC to develop that document, and we have at this point distributed frequently asked questions documents to hospitals that are interested in meeting the meaningful use criteria for syndromic surveillance in Florida, and that includes, you know, outlining the message format, providing the full review as of now, an implementation guide, and then outlining the data elements that we're looking for. The way that it will work in Florida is to route the messages from hospitals through our data integration broker, who will take in the HL7 message, translate it to the type of file that Essence wants to see, and we'll batch that in a more real-time scenario than we do now. It will depend somewhat upon the hospital's capability as well. So here's a schematic of the how the data flow through the system. So you have the different data sources here and sent at different time intervals dependent upon the data source, encrypted data transfer into the Essence system where varying degrees, again, depending on the data source of data processing occur. Here with the ED data, for instance, you'll get the natural language processing piece going, and we'll create the syndrome categories and sub-syndromes. Then there's also the detection database, if you will, where different types of analyses are run on the various data sources. Here, a couple things to note. We have been working with CDC to try to send data to BioSense. We're not there yet, but I'm optimistic it'll happen at some point. And we've been sending data to distribute since 2009. And at this point here, we have these role-dependent access levels, and we have the county health department, Epi users, state Epi users, and participating hospital users. These are sort of the broad categories. There are some small deviations to this, but in general, this is our user group. But the access level criteria can actually be fairly flexible in how that's provided. And if we have a situation where we want to just give someone access to one data source, and maybe just the mortality data because that's all they really need, then we can do that as well. So I'm going to highlight the Roman data. It's come up in people contacting me individually from different states and the CDC, and it's sort of been one of the more heavily used data sources. So I'll talk a little bit more about this. So again, the Merlin system is our repository for reportable disease data, a transactional system. We, all 67 county health departments, I should say, use the system for reporting. What gets into the Essence system is a de-identified data set. And so by de-identified, I mean no names, no addresses, no social security numbers. We do get our five-digit zip, et cetera, age, and so on and so forth. It's simply a piped on the text file sent via SFTP, and we do update with new records as well as updating previously sent records, because we get it at various points of the reporting process. As soon as an individual starts entering a case in the Merlin and creates an ID, then that will be sent in. There may still be variables that are empty that we will then update as the investigation proceeds on a case-by-case basis, and all of these will just be included in the file that's sent. So why do this? I mean, why did we want to do this? And as I mentioned before, it's an idea of sort of flattening out the data, if you will, providing a file to Essence that would allow users at the state and local levels to do essentially, 90% of what they need to do with the data, to do good descriptive epidemiologic analysis and monitor what's going on either statewide or in their communities or across counties, et cetera. Wanted to capitalize on the existing functionality that Essence had and that Essence was building upon, rather than spending money on other systems to build that functionality. And this also allowed for one place where we can aggregate a number of other data sources as they become available, as it becomes logical to include them. So here we increased accessibility to a number of reports. Closing public health surveillance is an important part of the surveillance process. And also, as I mentioned, new ways to look at the data, time series analyses, a number of new dashboard functions that we can display the data in that are updated, various types of mapping tools, including creating animation, maps that are animated by county or zip code, population denominator mapping, table builder functionality, summarizing the data in various types of table views, including statistical summary tables, where we'll create monthly counts by disease, by county, for instance. These are common reports that counties will put into their monthly newsletter, for instance, or biweekly newsletter, or whatever it may be. And now we've really automated that, whereas prior, required a lot of external analysis and data manipulation. And we've really been able to streamline and make this a more efficient process as a result, and therefore can get the data out where it can be used. This is an example of some of the various counties. This isn't the complete list, but examples of how of reports, basically, that counties will add these data to the reports as sort of situational awareness and feedback back to the communities that essentially give them the data and that they work with. So lessons learned, another number of lessons learned slides here. You really need to find working in an environment where public health informatics and the value of public health surveillance data is really seen as important. That getting that high level buy-in means a lot and can allow you to do some of this innovative work. You really need to work with all the various stakeholders early on in the process. And in terms of the emergency department data, we had a statewide work group that we convened prior to even selecting the system, and making sure that everyone was on board with the various details associated with doing this. system operations piece should be invisible to data providers and users. And really, as a culture within your organization, be open to change. I mean, this is an iterative process. You start using a system and you learn, oh, well, why don't we do it this way or do it that way? And really have to be open to an evolution. The manager of a system really needs to define who the end users are, and preferably should be or have been one of those end users at one point, and really develop a clear understanding of this. Be a user of the system, him or herself, have access to all aspects of the system so that you can essentially be the primary tester, if you will. Be in close communication with the users and the data providers, and really limit the number of barriers that are between those groups, both in terms of training and support, but also be responsive to data providers' questions and concerns. Need to understand the characteristics of the various data sources. I've heard this a number of times in presentations here today, and can't overemphasize that. You really need to know your data, and as you get more and more and more data, it becomes more difficult because you really need to have a group of people that can get this work done effectively and properly. Being involved with data quality issues and really have a responsive IT support. So we work very closely, obviously, with Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory. They're the developers of the system, and we've really had a productive relationship where we learn from each other, and we each provide feedback that I think really builds the system to this point where we have it today. Ideally, they also have unfettered access to the servers. I know it makes their life much easier, and it's more difficult in environments where they don't. Difficult to do updates, difficult to do fixes, etc. So the more ease of access there is across these areas, the simpler it is to get work accomplished. So some other lessons learned. Be flexible with data providers. We've needed to do that in our environment. In part here, in terms of ED data, and that's because it's not required in Florida for emergency departments to do any of this. They don't have to send this data to us. I mean, we're getting more of a response now because of the incentives associated with the use, but historically, there hasn't been a requirement that they do this. And so that paints our context for approaching them. What can we ask for? We have to be careful about asking too much and how much extra work it entails, et cetera. With recruitment, we want to be persistent, obviously, capitalize if you can on public health events. There's some examples there. Build on existing relationships. I work closely with the local health departments in Florida to expand to additional data sources. They're the ones that have the data provider relationships, and I'm there to support that. If they don't have the time or energy and they give me the go ahead, then I'll go ahead and be the person that connects directly with the local health departments myself. So. And as I mentioned, I've worked at the local level before and I have a sense of how that interaction works. You want to really, if you can, partner with key hospital association organizations, et cetera. That always helps to get the word out and to work with that population can be quite valuable. User support, participation, and buy-in. I mentioned this prior, earlier, a few slides, and essentially boils down to being accessible, being responsive. And if you are, then people know that you're working on this, you're aware of this, there's an issue specifically. I get emails on a daily basis about certain things, and it's just an ongoing communication, and communication is the core here. It's very helpful if you can establish a core group of what I call super users, because they can really help you drive the system and get a lot of good local, on-the-ground feedback on how the system ought to be developed to do certain things. And these are the people who are using the data, and so that's a valuable activity to be a part of. And trainings, we can definitely do more trainings. I readily admit that we don't do as much as we perhaps should, and I think the system will be used more and more effectively and more trainings we can do. And that's always on my list of things to do, is try to get out and do more trainings. But certainly, these trainings should cover the purpose, and the purpose varies depending on the data source to some extent. How to use the system, but also when to use the system. So where are we going? Always exploring new data sources, perhaps adding prescription drug data. We've had some discussions about that with other groups. We've been curious about the 911 EMS call data. There's some organizational difficulties in Florida with how that data are not aggregated at any real level. So that's something that we would like to explore in the future. Working diligently with regard to meaningful use. always trying to figure out better ways to make the system efficient in its querying capability, and how can we save people time to get the information that they need. If we can get good quality data, I think this is sort of what we've been our driving goal in a sense in working this project, is that to get high quality data in an appropriately timely manner, analyzed and turned into recommendations, so that those people who run the programs can have data available to them that can guide where to allocate what are often scarce public health resources in an effective manner, and hopefully in a way that's less costly than it was before. And I think our work with the ESSENCE system has really built that out, and we've seen good results based upon that. So, and who knows, maybe we'll be in the cloud one day too. Lots of cloud talk here, so we'll see where that goes. Lots of work out there. And I'd like to acknowledge Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Lab, Wayne Loshin, who's actually here in the front row here, Rich Wojcik and Joe Lombardo, of course, the project manager there. And then within my acute disease surveillance section, supervisors and colleagues, Janet Hamilton and Dr. Richard Hopkins. I don't know if we're taking questions now or later, or how are we going to do it? It's fine.
They've asked us to have questions now.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's
is there any questions? Yes. Do we want to give someone a, I don't know, a mic? Yeah. If you can speak loud, you can.
I'm just wondering if your the reportable condition that data is mapped to the same syndrome category as the ED data, or
no, at this point there's no mapping process. We take the...
Repeat the question.
Okay, the question was whether or not the reportable disease data are somehow categorized as syndromes or sub-syndromes in our ESSENCE implementation. No, at this time it's not. There's been recently a conversation about the possibility of thinking about how that might be done. But right now we take the data directly from the reportable disease file and just have a separate module where we can then query, you know, any of the reportable diseases individually. It's not lumped with the ED data.
So you can't map or chart the two different types of data on the same chart then?
We can do that. So what we could do is say, for instance, if you wanted to have a time series graph and you wanted to look at GI syndrome or some sub-syndrome for diarrhea or whatever, and you wanted to look to see if, what shigellosis was like at the same time, you could take those two and map and chart them on one time series graph to see what the trends that they correlate to look similar. We've done that with other things, for instance, Ciguatera poisoning is reportable in Florida, and we will find cases through our poison control call data. We'll see cases in the ED data and then, of course, in the Merlin data. So we'll map the same disease from different data sources in one place.
So is it Merlin? Is that your reportable disease?
Yeah.
So in that system, I'm assuming there's things you can do in this system that you can't do in Merlin, then mapping-wise and charting-wise.
That's correct. And
okay.
The way that the data are analyzed, the way the data are visualized, there are significant differences.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Yes. No. Hey.
Past Davies Award winner.
Hey, Aaron. Training is something we struggle with, too, in North Carolina. And there's been some discussion about setting up, like, PowerPoints with audio. Although the trainings that we do are highly customized, when we go to the user, we show them their data so they kind of see the power of the system. Have you thought about doing, like, recorded audio sort of stuff?
Actually, J2 did a similar recording, but actually through the system itself. So if you use the products, there are a number of them. I think Adobe has something similar, and Camtasia is another one, where we really wanted to do more of this ourselves, and I think we still need to figure out a way to do this. But for instance, with Camtasia, not that I'm promoting this particular product or not, but you can navigate through the actual live system, clicking through and talk through it, what you're doing and why you're doing it, whatever you want to say, and then post that up on a website for training. And that's a great idea. Definitely value there.
So I'll comment on that. So what we've done is built an entirely simulated data set. So specifically, one of the big benefits of that is that you can do training sets with it. You lose a little bit of the you know, what jurisdiction am I looking at? Why do I care about Maryland if I'm in Florida sort of situation? But if a user can get past that, at least now you have a training data set that you can show somebody who doesn't have the rights to see your data set. And that's been pretty powerful.
I'll just also add that we have something called Training Tuesdays, I was reminded of. And that's a quick 30-minute focused training on a particular purpose. And so every Tuesday at 2 o'clock is a particular topic. And we do try to include the essence of functionality in that. And I also do impromptu, quite frequently I'll do impromptu WebEx training. I'll get a couple emails in the morning, and clearly there's an issue with trying to do X, Y, Z, or what have you. And so I'll call or email the person and say, hey, will you have time today or tomorrow? I'm just supposed to do a WebEx, and I'll show you what you need to know.
I don't know if Mike Coletta still here or not, but the National Capital Region's also done a series of exercises with that same concept of training in mind, where we'll let the users stay back in their offices for, you know, a couple hours on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and each day we'll increment the system up a day and add more outbreak cases of something and see whether or not they find it, what their communication channels are. We actually have somebody man a phone line and pretend to be CDC and the fire department and everybody else, which is quite hilarious most of the time. And then on Thursday or Friday, we'll have everybody come sit around a table and hot wash what worked, what didn't. It's a great way to test the system, and it's a great way to test the training aspects of what was too complicated for the users to understand by themselves, and whether or not a function even worked. So it's training both directions.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Put my other hat on here. Way to go, Aaron. Thank you very much.